Today's podcast is brought to you by Health IQ and another sponsor. But right now we're going to get to Health IQ because they're back for another round after the first couple months. We touched base and I said, hey, Health IQ, how'd it go? They said, great. There are actually 16 trainiacs that have signed up and every single one of them has saved money on their life insurance.
16. That's amazing, actually.
It's a good round number. That's more life insurance than I sold ever as a life insurance advisor.
Does that say something about how good you were at that job?
Fantastic. Health IQ, very good company. We're big fans of it. Unfortunately, we can't use it because they're a US-based life insurance agency and we're up in Canada. But what they've done is they've set up life insurance specifically designed for swimmers, cyclists, runners, vegans, people who take care of themselves. And those people, like us, trainiacs, can save as much as 25% on their life insurance as opposed to paying the same as the unhealthy burger and fries sitting on the couch people.
Well, that's an amazing thing.
Great deal. Great deal. Go check out healthiq.com/triathlon Taryn. Or use the coupon code Triathlon Taryn if you just call in and let them know that you came from us. Next sponsor, NTK, take it away.
Four Sigmatics back.
They're back with their mushroom coffee. I've been singing their praises.
You love this stuff.
Love it. I probably have it up to four times a day, and I'm going to give you guys a recipe idea that I've talked about a lot that has probably been a huge hit, one of the biggest recipe hits that we've had as Gracie scratches her collar, the bulletproof, air quotes, bulletproof coffee that's taken the world by storm. I've veganized it, and instead of just straight up coffee, I've Four Sigmaticized it, because using that Four Sigmatic cordyceps or mushroom coffee, you get antioxidants, you get adaptogens, boost your immune system, lower caffeine, less gut rot, all good things. Very tasty.
So are you drinking less actual coffee these days? I don't know this because I don't see you in the daytime.
Mm-hmm. Instead of four cups, I would say it's two cups of coffee tops and then probably two or three cups of Four Sigmatic.
Well, thanks Four Sigmatic for making Taryn healthier.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I feel tippy top of the heap of fitness right now. Go to foursigmatic.com/triathlon Taryn to save 15%. Just straight up, or if you use the coupon code Triathlon Taryn, 15% off of any Four Sigmatic product. Today's guest is Tim Ford, who is an age group triathlete from Australia who sports a 4:17 personal best time in the half Ironman distance. But the very interesting thing about Tim is that we didn't get him on here because of his time in triathlons. He has some fantastic times, done almost 100 triathlons, very high performance athlete, but it didn't start out that way for Tim. Tim is the first athlete in our transformation month because Tim has gone through a very significant transformation.
Right. He used to be, well, as he put it, quite overweight. He was very large and
264 pounds, 120 kilograms.
And he has since lost over 100 pounds, over 50 kilograms, and is now very fit, putting up great times, and talks a lot about his journey, a journey that a lot of people can identify with because many people are still where he was in the middle of it. Some have come through to the end where he is, but he talks openly about what that was like, what got him there, how he still feels today, the struggles he still has today. Super interesting story, really interesting guy.
Yeah, and talks very openly about some of the things that you probably wouldn't expect from somebody who is such a talented athlete, lost so much weight. I think if you go through that, a lot of people might think, well, you know, he must be so confident now. But in Tim's case, he talks openly about the struggles of losing the weight and how it's not just a journey of a number on a scale, that it's a journey mentally as well. And even though he's now a guy that's sponsored by bike brands and he's got his own podcast, the Think Fit podcast about triathlon and weight loss, he runs Team Maca X, like his lifestyle is triathlon completely, but he still struggles with a lot of the things that
everybody struggles
that
with.
That everyone struggles with. And it was a really interesting story. So thanks, Tim, for being on the show here. And I hope everyone enjoys this first Transformation Month podcast. Tim Ford, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to you and your listeners. It's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Well, just wait until you hear the first question. You might regret
calling it an opportunity. I heard on your podcast that I was just listening to over the last few days that you still refuse to wear Speedos. Yet on Instagram a couple days ago, I see you washing a bike in a bikini. What's the actual story here?
About the bikini? So basically, I don't know about you guys, but I have a few followers on Instagram now and I get a bit of hate. I find because I try not to take myself so seriously. I try to put up, you know, things that I think are a bit funny or whatever. A lot of people get quite angry about it sometimes. I'm like, I'm joking. And then I've noticed there's a bit of a trend lately on social media of like women who are, you know, triathletes or whatever, and they stay with their bike in a bikini or they're washing their bike in a bikini. And some of the comments about it are so angry. And I thought, you know what, like I'm sort of going to try to take the piss out of everybody a little bit here. So I was like, oh, look, apparently this is how you wash your bike on Instagram. And then at the same time, I was also saying, but who cares? If a woman wants to bloody wash a bike in a bikini and put up a photo of it, good luck to her. And then, yeah, it was basically just that, me being a bit of a dickhead. That's you know.
But yet you refuse to wear a Speedo.
I do refuse to wear a Speedo. I've spoken about it quite openly. Like I've got a lot of body image issues, I think, associated with being as big as I was. I don't particularly feel comfortable in a lot of smaller items of clothing, and Speedos are certainly an item of clothing that I do not feel comfortable wearing. And a lot of people give me a hard time. My coach loves to give me a hard time about it. A lot of my friends give me a hard time about it, but it's probably just, yeah, I've got some stretch marks and side effects of being as big as I was, and Speedos are not my swimmer of choice.
You know what? Give it a few years. I too have stretch marks. I don't know if you've ever seen, but I used to be 215 pounds. So,
and he's not a tall guy.
And I'm not a tall guy at all. So it wasn't a good look. And I've still got the stretch marks. And I remember I want to say in your case, you're like 4, 5, 6 years since you've lost your weight. Is that right?
Yeah, I think I lost the majority of my weight in 2012. And then since then, was it 11? 11, 12, something around there. And then, yeah, it's sort of the other bits have dropped off over time. But yeah, the big chunk was about 5 years ago, I'd say.
Okay, so your confidence for the Speedo will come in the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was bashful about it. And then all of a sudden I'm like, you know what? I am going to show off all my stretch marks. People are going to love it.
He does. In fact, there are now comments on the YouTube channel. Do you ever not wear those? Could you put on more clothes? No, he says, no, I will not. And he does not.
Well, I joked that I was only going to wear a shirt once I had a shirt sponsor, thinking I'd never have to wear a shirt in a workout again, because that would get me out of it. And then a shirt sponsor from Australia, Scody, came on board. I'm like, oh, okay, son of a bitch, now I have to wear a shirt.
Well, you should ask for it. You should ask for enough shirts. And then at the end of every workout, me and my friend joked about this. We'd love to create like a brand of disposable shirts so that you finish your workout and then you do like the Hulk and just like rip it off at the end of the workout and chuck it on the ground.
Well, there's there's disposable underwear. Like if you go to the spa, they have these little disposable underwear packets that you can open up and put on after you've showered. If you didn't bring clean, new, dry underwear to wear or whatever, there's disposable underwear. So why couldn't there be disposable shirts?
Let's table this. Let's table this as an idea here, Tim. I think we got something here.
You were saying I would regret all the opportunity. I'm thinking that I've come on this show and we're now talking about disposable underwear and ripping off your clothes.
Yeah,
sorry that I've curtailed this so badly so quickly.
The best or worst part of your day, it's hard to say.
So let's talk a little bit about like how you got to be the athlete that you are right now. So your personal best half Ironman, I want to say like a 4:17 there. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And you didn't start out that way. So your first race, I've got stats here. You were 264 pounds, 120 kilos, and it took you 4 hours and 5 minutes to do an Olympic.
That's correct.
This is all correct. Yet still, you kept going in triathlon after that.
I did. Look, it's funny because look, I probably weighed more than 120 kilos. I stopped weighing myself when I saw 120. I don't know the biggest that I got, but so I did that triathlon. Yeah, thinking, oh, you know, it's not that hard. A friend of mine wanted to sign me up for my birthday present, and I was like, yeah, I can do that. It won't be too difficult. And doing it was, oh man, like, whew, I've made it. I remember looking at him at one point because he's an absolute legend, my mate Rob, and he stayed with me all day. I mean, technically, I probably would have got a drafting penalty or something because he rode next to me on the bike to make sure I didn't die. And then he, you know, walked around the run with me. And I remember about 2K into the run, I've looked at him, I've said, Jesus, like with God as my witness, I will never do this again. This is a huge mistake. And famous last words, obviously, because then I realized that I really liked the bike and went, I think probably the bike, you know, when you're big, there's not that impact. It's not as physically demanding, but you're still quite active. So I walked away and went, I like the bike. And then after that, and I started to get that little itch going, I didn't do a very good job of that one. Like even I knew that I had not done a good job of that race. Like the fact that they were packing the course up while I was still finishing, or the marshals are coming over to me on my first lap going, are you on your last lap yet? I'm like, no, this is my first lap.
Oh.
Sorry.
You were the guy that they were picking up the cones in behind? Like, come on, we got to close down exactly. The course. Let's go, buddy.
Exactly right. And I think I'm the sort of guy that I don't like to not do things properly. Even back then, if I do something, I want to do it properly. And I thought if I'm going to do this, I've got to do one properly, basically, is what I thought told myself, and walked away and, started to train. And look, it definitely, the training wasn't specifically triathlon training to start with, but it was obviously with that idea of doing another triathlon down the track. And I think I came back, was it 12, 18 months later, I did another Olympic distance and went 2:45, and then did another one another year after that and went 2:24. And then I moved up to 70.3 after that because I thought, let's do something a bit longer. This Olympic stuff's not as hard as I remember it being. So, yeah.
But I mean, it took you over 4 hours to complete an Olympic. You actually experienced the thing that many people dread, which is to say, being the last person coming off the course. I always say this is one of the reasons I wouldn't run a marathon or do a triathlon for exactly that, because I'd be the last one coming in. And that scares me. I don't know. It feels like an awful thing that happened to you. Yeah. Those 4 hours probably felt miserable, and yet you did another one. So what was it about that made you say, yes, I think I want to experience this potential misery again?
I think if you had have told me that I would have been dead last, maybe would have made me reconsider doing that race. Because again, I think I used to convince myself that yes, I was big, but I was like, oh, I'm strong. I do weights. Like I'm not that overweight, but in reality I was. And I definitely didn't think it would be as hard as it was. And I think it was that idea that I've seen. I was always looking for ways to try to help myself lose weight. I've said a lot before, I thought I tried everything. And I think it was that idea of trying to use it as motivation a bit, like, no, this is something that I think can actually motivate me to keep going with the training. And again, I was hoping, man, everything was crossed that I would, number one, I wouldn't come dead last again. And number two, it wouldn't take me another 4 hours to do. I'd moved to Norway by that point as well. And one of my wife's friends and her fiance, they were interested in getting active too. And so what I actually set them a challenge was, I said, if my wife, her friend and her boyfriend at the time did a relay and I did the whole thing, I had to try to beat their team time. And that was the sort of incentive to get me really training hard and get me a lot more active. And I'm happy to say that I did manage to beat their relay time, which was good. And I think that's what it was. It was that idea that, I hadn't done it properly the first time, and then I sort of got incentivized to give it another crack. So,
what were you like as a kid? Were you overweight, or did it come on as an adult?
It came on when I turned, I think, late high school for me. So once I started to turn about 15, 16, I started to get a bit bigger. I was always very active. I know that the American and North American or Canadian or North American system is very different to what we do in Australia with sport. Sport is not so much a school thing here as much as it is, you go away on weekends and you play for your local team. So I played soccer since I was about 5. I played cricket. And then I did bits of swimming. We had swimming carnivals, but I never played anything like super, super seriously. But I was always, very active. Me and my brother used to play sport all the time. And then, once I started to turn 15, 16, getting a bit bigger, I started to drink. That didn't help. And then once I turned 18, I got a job at a bar, at a pub. That didn't help because my drinking went up, my sleeping went down, and my food intake increased dramatically. And I guess I also stopped being active around that time as well, because I was more interested in being, number one party boy, all that sort of stuff. And
you two guys have the same story. Like this is quite similar to the path Taryn went down. So this is kind of fascinating, actually, that you both started kind of the same way and have now ended up in the same spot, which is really interesting.
He's a slight bit faster.
A little faster than
you? Little faster.
I think lots of people have had the same experience, and that's why so many people come to me with questions or ask me for things, because the story is the same for so many people. It is that, I was an active kid. I lost my weight, early 20s, late teens, whatever, and I want to get back. And I think that's the thing, is that you look at the way we exist. I mean, I'm getting a bit philosophical here, but you're almost set up for failure because, all these things that we're not allowed to do up until a certain age, where all of a sudden we do, and we're like, I actually quite like this. I'm going to go 110%. I think it's something that a lot of people men and women seem to struggle with. So,
well, and you know, interestingly, you're in Australia, we're in Canada, both known for being not party cultures, but like beer drinking cultures. We're proud of our, you know, the alcohol content in our beer, and we drink real beer, and it's a, you know, it's sort of way part of the national identity. And similar to Australia, Aussies are known to be able to throw back a few, right? So it's interesting as well that we both live in these cultures where that is a big, that's,
it's a point of pride.
It's a point of pride,
right? It's a point of pride to be the biggest drunk asshole, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And he's exactly right. I think you're almost are set up for failure. And something I've spoken a lot about after I've made this massive shift in my lifestyle is a lot of the friends that I had when I was big, and like, you know, my brother always goes, oh, old Tim was fun Tim. And a lot of the friends that I used to have, I've lost.
I heard that just 2 weeks ago.
Oh, yeah?
Literally, just heard that. Yeah.
Old Taryn.
I miss old Taryn. He was more fun. Like,
he was going to die of a heart attack. So this is a better Taryn, probably.
Exactly right. Yeah.
Let's take less fun Taryn who's alive. I prefer that personally. But anyway.
What was the catalyst to change? Was it that triathlon, or was there a series of things leading up to that? And the triathlon was just the straw that broke the camel's back.
I'd say that triathlon, that first triathlon, it certainly kickstarted things. But I think, look, I said, I don't think I prepped properly for that race. I actually put on weight in the lead up to that event because I convinced myself I needed to carbo load, and my serving sizes went up. You know, all the stuff that you don't really understand, but you hear these keywords thrown around like, oh, carbo load. So in the lead up to the race, I think I was putting on weight and I actually got quite sick. I had pneumonia about 6 weeks out from the event. And when I was getting the x-rays done for the pneumonia to check if I had pneumonia, the scan came back, or the x-ray came back saying that my heart was enlarged, which, you know, I was 24 years old. Then they said, this is a sign of oncoming heart disease. And I remember even speaking to the doctor going, oh, but you know, I'm training for a triathlon. Are you sure that it's not just that? He's like, mate, the amount of training you would need to be doing to make your heart this big, and looking at the size of you, I don't think that's the problem. So that really gave me a bit of a fright. And again, it wasn't like something clicked overnight, because I did that triathlon and I still didn't lose weight for another 6 or 7 months after that first race. It was always like, yeah, I need to do this. I think, look, two things that I can definitely say really got me motivated. And I know he's not a very popular character now, but I read Lance Armstrong's book, It's Not About the Bike. And then while we can now reflect on it as a piece of fiction, it definitely got me motivated. Like, that book was something that made me go, Christ almighty, like, look at what this guy did. Like, what's my excuse? And then the other one as well was Chris McCormack's book, I'm Here to Win. That's another thing that I read. And I went, actually, man, I really got me motivated a lot more to do a lot more triathlon. So they're definitely two things that triggered a big change in my outlook and my approach to things. Absolutely. And I'm sorry, it's not very popular to say Lance. It's almost like
Taryn pokes that bear on a regular basis.
Yeah, occasionally when I need to spike views on YouTube, I'll do a Lance Armstrong video and poke that bear. What is some of the stats now? Like your race personal best, how many races have you done? What's your biggest achievement in the sport?
Okay, so I've done 26 half Ironmans. I've probably done, close to 100 triathlons, I'd probably say by now. My PB is 4:17, although I still think I'm better than that at the moment. I've been struggling with an injury now for about 9 months. That meant my last few races, I haven't gone so well.
What injury?
Actually, we don't know. I've got MRIs booked next week because I have literally been told it's every single different thing under the sun. It's a hamstring problem that people say it's a nerve thing. It's a tendinopathy. It's a tear. It's a tendonitis. It's bloody, you know, witch doctor's got a voodoo doll sticking pins. I don't know what it is. I've got MRIs booked next week. I saw a sports doctor this week and an MRIs to actually finally work out what's going on so I can get better. But yeah, my PB is 4:17. I think my biggest achievement in the sport, it's weird, but I think it's not like a victory or anything like that. But there's a race, it's the oldest race in Australia. It's called the Nepean Triathlon. And the first year I did it because one of the guys I knew wanted to do his first triathlon. I said, I'll do it with you. Like, I feel like I have this obligation to recreate what my friend did with me. So I try to do races with people who maybe want to get active. And doing that race, my brother actually surprised me and he'd signed up for the triathlon. I'd been trying to get my brother to do a triathlon for years and he never wanted a bloody bar of it. And he rocked up and he's there. And I'm like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, I'm racing. I was like, what do you mean? Like, this is amazing. And he came back the next year as well and did the race. And we came out of transition. We came out of T2 together and we ran for the first kilometer side by side. And I think for me, that is probably just something, again, it's not like making a podium or an achievement, but that is probably the best moment I've had in triathlon, was that 1 kilometer run with my brother. And I think the fact that I could then turn to him and say, all right, mate, enough of this. I've got to go fast now. Piss off, sort of thing. That was like an extra cream on the top. But that's definitely probably my best moment in the sport.
Who's older, you or your brother?
I'm the oldest. Oh. He's 2 years younger.
So you're like, give it a few years here, kid.
Well, again, he was always the athlete when we were younger. Luke was a very fast. He ran the 100 meters in like 10.4 seconds. Like he was very fast. And I was always trying to, you know, once I started to get bigger, trying to keep up with him and failing. So it's nice now that I'm the more athletic of the two of us. And I like to, I'm not a very competitive person except when it comes to him. And anytime I do anything against him now, I must crush him as hard as
I must crush him. That's good.
You must have had some sort of sporting background because like a 4:17, that is a bloody fast time.
Like it's not like my progression in the sport has really been like I think my first 70.3, I went just over 5 hours. And then like the increases have been, if you look at my progression, it's been a sort of constant little improvements. Like, you know, I see a lot of people come to the sport and they straight away go to a 4:15. You're like, I hate you. I hate you so much. But it's taken me years to get sort of down to that sort of speed, just years of consistent training. I do train a lot. Like I'm quite a high volume athlete. I do a lot of training every week. And I think that's what it is. I'm a big believer that it's hard work trumps talent every day. And that's why I think I'm getting down to the sort of speeds I'm now, is because I bloody work hard at it. Like I do train, you know, 20 hours a week, 52 weeks a year normally, sort of thing. So
you have done a lot of races though. That is a lot of races. And how much time, like how many years are we talking that you fit in that number of races that you just told us?
Six years.
Do you do anything else?
I certainly do. I finished my law degree last year.
Good grief.
I also do, I was working as a social media manager for a hotel in Sydney for most of that degree as well.
Does a podcast.
And I now.
Let's not forget about the podcast as well. He's a coach. Also,
I'm a coach and I run Team Macca X as well. I'm the guy behind all of that stuff now. I started to run the team at the start of this year as well. So I have plenty of things to keep myself busy. I always say I'm a bit of a glutton for punishment because I keep putting my hand up to do more stuff. So
wow.
I'm very good at time management.
Let's get into the nitty gritty here because I'm sure there's a lot of people that are like, I want that. I want to do that. I'm overweight and I want to be a good athlete. So like specifically, walk us through what a training week is like. And then I want to get into nutrition and eating and supplements if you take them. But week by week, how have you structured your training?
Again, it's shifted a lot, I suppose, because of different, you know, different times in my training, I've had different things to focus on. But I mean, at the moment, my training is pretty consistent, but it's, you know, I maybe do 3 or 4 trainer sessions a week. Maybe then I'd say my shortest trainer session is about 2 hours. My longest is about 4 hours. And most of those are quite structured. So I think if you're on the trainer, the advantage of the trainer is that you can be so specific with the work that you do. Like out on the road, you know, there's wind, there's traffic lights, there's cars, there's other cyclists. Whereas on a trainer, if you have to hold watts for a certain time, you hold the watts for a certain time. So I do, 3 or 4 of those. I then do maybe 1 or 2 rides a week outdoors as well. Maybe my longest ride is 4 or 5 hours on the weekend normally with some friends. At the moment, I'm only running twice a week, but that's again because I've got this hamstring problem and I'm still not doing any intensity. But normally I'd run 3 or 4 times a week, sometimes off the bike, sometimes I'd split them up and then swimming 3 times a week. I swim with a squad 2 nights a week and then 1 swim by myself, which is normally more of a strength focused swim because again, I'm by myself and I can just put on all the toys and just get through the kilometers. But there's definitely a big bike focus.
Yeah, big bike focus from the sounds of it. And what about a day of eating if there is a typical day?
Yeah, look, I'm a big believer in portion sizes. I think I don't like particular diets. People want to eat, you know, put whatever you like in your body. It doesn't bother me. If you find something that works for you, keep at it. Like that's the main thing I think with food. So for me, I try to go relatively, I have a dietitian that I've been working with for about a year now. Her name's Chloe McLeod. And from Chloe, we basically worked out how much I need to eat. And then that's how much I eat. So and I don't snack so much. Breakfast for me is normally, say, a bowl of porridge or muesli. I have about 25,000 coffees a day. That's probably my one real vice. Lunch is, a salad or a sandwich, nothing too fancy. And then for dinner is like, a lot of the time it's meat with a salad or things like, you know, we might do things where we take a traditional recipe, but we try to make more healthy adaptations to make it a bit better. So, you know, things like instead of using cream in recipes, we go for yogurts, or instead of using chips, we get these mountain bread things, we break them up and use them. Just things like that, sort of that but lower the calorie thing, but you still get in enough nutrition. I think a lot of the time I see people who actually, we spoke about this on my podcast a few weeks ago. I think the problem is with a sport like triathlon, if people come into it wanting to get fast and lose weight at the same time, they're ultimately going to set themselves up for failure, because I think the approach to weight loss and the approach to performance are very different. And I see a lot of people who are trying to go fast, but they want to lose weight, so they don't eat enough. And then it impacts their ability to train for performance. And at the same time, people who want to lose weight, because they're trying to lose weight, they're not going to be able to put in the work required for the performance. So I think you've really got to look at separating the two. Yeah,
I totally agree. You see the pros that they only get down to their air quotes race weight in the last, I'd say, 2.5 months of a race, of, exactly, of their key race. Otherwise, they're staying too lean. And like I was talking to Sarah Piampiano about it last week, and she said, I just got too skinny too quickly. And that's dangerous this far out from Kona. So she needs to work on putting on weight to keep that performance level high.
That's exactly right. I think I got the lightest I've ever been. I got down to about 69 kilos, and I'm 6 foot. So 69 for me was, I was pretty skinny, and it was no good. It was probably one of my worst races I've done, actually. I was weak. I had no power. I was tired. And I think it was, literally, just was too skinny. I didn't have enough meat on the bones, so to speak. So now I race at about 72 kilos is pretty good for me. And if I get, if I get much lighter than that, I get quite sick and have no power. And again, I cannot maintain that weight long-term. Like I sit comfortably around 74, 75 kilos most of the time. When it gets towards a race, I drop down those last couple of kilos. And I think I've spoken with lots of people. I've spoken with Chris a lot about this, Chris McCormack a lot about this. And it's that there's some toll on your body of being down at that race weight for too long. And you can only do it a certain number of times each year, I think, before it really does start to make you sick, get injured, all that sort of thing. And it is, it's that problem that triathletes have where they think that they need to be that skinny all the time. And it's not the case. I think you need to train with a bit of extra weight on you to make sure you can recover properly and you can do the endurance that you need to do. And then, when it does come time, drop those last few kgs or pounds or whatever your preference is.
That lowest weight was 151 pounds for the North Americans listening, which is pretty low for how tall are you?
6 foot, so 182 centimeters.
Oh, that's low.
Yeah, you were skinny.
You're skinny, buddy.
Yeah.
A skeleton with skin, basically.
Yeah, no, and that's not good from trying to race well perspective, but just from, that's a starvation body. That's not good on any level.
Exactly right. And that's something, again, and it's a lesson I think I had to learn as well, because it's so funny that you can be told this, but in your head, you're like, no, you've got to be skinny. And it's a lot to do with your own self-doubts and fears a lot of the time as well. You see, I still struggle with this when I go to a race and you see the super skinny, lean, ripped triathletes. I'm like, oh God, they're going to absolutely belt me. And it's that actually going, I'm in control of myself and I can control what I can do and not worry about that, because that, while they're incredibly sure, I still might be a faster athlete than them. I might not be, I can't help it. And I think that's when I've made that mistake of getting too skinny for a race and going, this was horrific. I don't want to do that again. And that's why now I'm very well aware of the weight that I need to race at, the weight I need to train at, and all those sort of things.
Well, that's interesting. And listening to your podcast, we've picked up on the fact that you actually still have a hard time feeling like you've lost weight sometimes. So there's a bit of body dysmorphia, which many, many people who've lost weight experience, and body image issues, which you talked about with the Speedos earlier. So that's an interesting balance, right? Where you're talking about, you knew at that low weight, you were too skinny. It was no good. It was dangerous, et cetera. How much do you still deal with that idea that you aren't as small as you actually are, that you, your body, or your, maybe your mind doesn't realize your body's lost weight?
Daily. It's a daily struggle for me a lot of the time. And it's so funny because I've seen some photos of myself where I look the way I think I should look. But I remember when those photos are taken, I feel like I'm overweight. I'm still big. And it's very easy to spot the flaws rather than the things that are okay. So I deal with it constantly. Like, it's so hard as well because I'm aware that I'm doing it and I know that it's ridiculous, but I'm still not at a point where it's just not an issue for me anymore. I think because it was something that I struggled with so badly for so long, it's going to be a long road to recovery, I suppose. But I mean, I still sometimes get very self-conscious in wearing Lycra. I have certain cycling kits that I'll only wear because I'm convinced that they're too tight. So I only wear them when I know I'm down towards right, like stupid things like that. And realistically, the kit probably fits just the same. But again, I think, you know, using things like social media, like putting out those sort of photos, that bikini one for me, man, I was mortified doing it. Like, it was not like me going, this is fun. Like, I was very nervous and scared about doing it. And those are the sort of things that I think maybe are helping me a little bit to become a bit more confident about those sort of problems.
Well, you know, that's interesting too, because Taryn gets a lot of comments in the YouTube comments from folks when we've been telling the Newsday Tuesday stories. He's told a few stories of people who've had dramatic weight loss and weight loss surgery. And it's interesting that these similar themes are coming up over and over. And I think this is a great conversation to have because of what you're saying, and also what I'm seeing in the comments and Taryn is seeing in the comments, is that there's a lot more people out there like this. And not only that, this is a great conversation to have because this is typically a woman's conversation and not a man's conversation. So to have a fast, strong man like yourself, who's doing all this, working hard to admit, yeah, I've got body image issues. I think there's a lot of people out there, a lot of men out there who have those as well and are going to say, oh my God, I'm not alone. Like, I think that's so, so important. And Taryn gets that too, whenever we tell his sort of past story or people come across the podcast where he talks about his weight loss and his, you know, former drinking and all that kind of stuff. That again, we just get so many males reaching out saying, wow, I thought I was the only one, and they're not. And so this is great that we're able to openly talk about it.
We had a guest on our show months ago now, and she's a doctor. Like, she actually just, you know, qualified as a doctor, and she came from the opposite side. She battled with an eating disorder for a long time. And that's what, when we were talking about on the show, we were talking, and she goes, it is really uncommon for men to talk about these sort of things. And when me and Robbo, the guy that I do my show with, heard this, we were like, we almost felt like we have a responsibility now to try to talk more openly about these sort of things. Because exactly as you say, every time I've ever done any blog post or Instagram post or podcast about these things that I feel vulnerable or uncomfortable talking about, the feedback is always overwhelmingly positive, and people, exactly as you say, going, man, I feel exactly the same way. I didn't realize that. Like, so that's why we really now try to talk a lot about the things that we don't think is often spoken about by men. We're trying to normalize those things that are normal for the majority of people, but people are often uncomfortable to talk about.
Well, especially in triathlon, which in some ways you go to the big races and you're around the pros and it's a bit of a bro culture and everybody's pretty macho. And, you know, I feel like it would be hard for the average age grouper to feel good about themselves when they see, like, oh, look at those ripped pros and I'll never be that. And I'm just this, you know, whatever they think about themselves, whatever negative tape they play in their head and negative things they say about themselves. It's sad to know that, but great to know that there are accessible people like yourself, like Taryn again as well. It's that same thing where you guys are just everyday people doing this thing, just like all the rest of the other everyday people. And it's okay to be who you are. You don't have to be the ripped pro, which, I mean, they're awesome and they're amazing and we follow and idolize them for a reason, but we're not them. We don't have to aspire to be them. We can still be in this thing and great at it despite whatever issues we have in our head or think we have, or, you know, any of that.
It's exactly right. And it's funny, I had a person reach, they tagged our podcast on Instagram the other day, and they were saying something very similar about, they're about to do their first sprint triathlon and they're worried about how their tri suit's going to fit because they're overweight. And I commented on that thing. I said, listen, like, firstly, well, hopefully nobody is going to be sitting there going, this person doesn't belong on course. Look, they don't. If anybody is doing that, they're going to be in the minority, because the thing I love about the sport of triathlon so much, and the reason I do try to encourage so many people to do it, is that even that race when I was overweight, nobody was pointing at me going, oh, look at this fat guy. People were going, mate, keep going. Good luck. Like, don't give up. It was encouragement. At least I don't remember any negativity. There might have been, but I don't remember. But I overwhelmingly remember the positive reaction or the support that I was getting from other athletes. And I think that's the thing, is exactly right. Like, if you are a bigger person, or you are worried about it, or you are comparing yourself to these perfection, you know, the perfection of the pro athlete, you don't have to, because they're the minority. Like, in reality, in triathlon, that body type, that style of athlete is the minority. You look at any race, the majority of people are not in perfect condition.
They're just regular.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Everyone looks silly in spandex.
Mm-hmm. Onesies aren't a good look for anybody.
Nobody looks good in a onesie, but... Yeah.
Oh, mate, you're hurting my feelings. I try so hard. Yeah.
None of us pull it off, Tim. I'm sorry.
I hate to break it to y'all.
0% of us.
I think you're right. Correct. That is the correct answer.
But, you know, it's good what you and Mike, your co-host, are doing on the podcast, because especially being open about it, because on Instagram right now, there's the occasional Transformation Tuesday or Thursday or whatever it is. And that was actually when I've followed you for a while. And when you put up that one post recently, I went, holy shit, here, this guy has lost a ton of weight. I had no idea. And then I start digging into your podcast, and your co-host has done the same thing. Like, combined, you guys have lost 240 pounds, 100 kilos.
Something like that, yeah.
And you wouldn't know it on Instagram. So I think people might look at you and be like, be that unattainable, unapproachable person. But having that podcast where you can share the actual story, I think is very inspiring. So that's good. I think you guys are doing a great thing. Let's talk about kind of what you do now with athletes that come to you. And you mentioned it there that a lot of people will ask you questions and you're a coach right now. Looking back on what you've learned, where do you start people when they come to you?
I think the first thing I start with people is that discussion I said, because look, I'm not working with professional athletes or, you know, age group winning athletes at the moment, but I find that a lot of the people that come to me are those beginners or people that, you know, want to lose weight or whatever. And I say that to them. I say, if you want to lose weight, you need to understand that you're going to have to train for weight loss. Yes, you can train for triathlon and you can use triathlon as your method, but you need to identify that there are two different ways of training. There's weight loss training for triathlon, then there's the performance. And I say, if you really want to do this for the long run, if you want to make those long-term improvements and you want to lose weight, you need to start by focusing on the weight loss. So for me, when I allocate the training, it's a lot of that more strength-based stuff, lower intensity stuff. Again, I think a lot of the time people have this approach to lots of things is they go out at 110% and it ultimately always ends up in failure. So it's a lot of the time, it's also that case of trying to hold people back a lot of the time too, making them don't go too hard too soon, because I'd rather see you doing this for 6 weeks injury-free at 80% rather than going for 3 weeks at 110%, getting sick, getting injured. My approach is always to try to make them understand that's where you need to start from, that idea that this is a sport about consistency. This is a sport about endurance, not about, you know, you're not going to be going out there doing high intensity training your first week of training for a half Ironman in 6 months. So it's always, that first hurdle is making people understand that you need to wind back first, because yes, this is a long event that you're going to be spending 6, 7, 8 hours doing. You don't need to start going out and training 30 hours in your first week. You need to build up to it. And then from there, it's just getting that monitoring how they're going. If I see that they're making, you know, if there's certain things that they struggle with, changing it. If there's certain things that they seem to be excelling with, you know, increasing it. And I really think it is as well about setting the athletes up for success as much as I can.
Is there anything that you incorporate into your training now besides like just a 20-hour week and portion control that is consciously designed in your training plan and nutrition that is meant to keep the weight off? Like, do you feel that you need to still work to keep the weight off?
I think so. I mean, if I take breaks or lighter weeks, I definitely notice I put weight on quite easily. Unfortunately, it's unlucky. That's just how my body is, I guess, now. I think, I look, not specifically. I think everything I do is based more around the idea of trying to get the best performance out of my body now. And I do think that when I have taken breaks and come back into it, it is that same thing of making sure that the first priority is to get back down to a safer weight to train at. So it is, again, it's the lower intensity stuff. It's not going out and running 800s at 3 minute pace. It's like being smart to start with. But yeah, look, week to week, it's all about performance now. I think, again, maybe there are certain, you know, I do watch what I eat a lot during the week and try to relax a bit on weekends. But yeah, there's not a huge weight loss element into my training at the moment.
Can you think of major differences in your diet from before to now? Easy switches that people can make that are people that are thinking like, okay, I'm in here, Tim. Let's give me some tangible advice. What can I switch up?
And what did you switch up?
Just say don't eat shit. It's normally my golden rule. Like, we have a pretty good idea of what we should and shouldn't eat. But look, some of the things, because I love food. That's the other thing as well. I can't eat bland food. I hear about, you know, you hear Will Smith and Chris Hemsworth talking about their diets to get ripped for superheroes, and it's like chicken and broccoli. And it would not work for me. I would not succeed in it. And to be successful, you need to find what works for you. So things like, for example, instead of having pizza from the local pizza shop, whatever, we have a recipe for pizzas where we use like the thin Lebanese pocket bread that we use as a pizza base. So, and then less toppings. So it's not that, you know, super crazy amounts of cheese on top. We looked for recipes that sounded good, but obviously had lower calories in them. And it was things like, pasta sauces where the sauce was more, like, you know, you don't need as much pasta. So it was like a thicker sauce with lots of meat and vegetables and things like that. I just naturally increased my vegetable consumption. I used to not really eat vegetables at all, basically, except for deep fried potatoes. And one of the ways that we overcame that barrier was we challenged ourselves to go a month completely vegetarian, and it sucks. Like, it sucks so badly at the first week because I hated vegetables. But by doing that, I learned a lot of recipes, vegetables that I've really liked. And since then, I could happily be vegetarian if I wanted to, because I love vegetables so much. So other little simple things are things like, yeah, you know, we don't need, there's so much sugar in everything anyway. So if you don't need to put sugar on something, don't. Like, I used to have sugar in my tea, sugar in my coffee, sugar in my cereal. I don't do that anymore. I drink soda water a lot of the time instead of soft drinks because, again, I like the bubbles. I don't really care for the flavor.
Us too. We're big fans of the old fizzy water.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah, I think they're sort of simple things. I guess go for like grain bread rather than the white stuff. And sometimes if I'm not really feeling like I don't want to have a big pasta feed, but I feel like something like that, I use the zucchini noodles sometimes like that as well. And just avoiding, you know, again, just avoid things that are obviously no good for you. Like if it's a thick, creamy sauce or something like that, do you really need it? If you can have something that's been baked rather than fried, I try to go for the baked. Just, again, I think it's nothing mind-blowing. It's all the stuff that we all sort of, I think, fundamentally understand that I try to follow. Just, yeah.
Yeah, I remember the very first day that I started eating healthy. It was like a very distinct day that I remember. All right, today's the day that I'm going to eat healthy. And I switched up my Dunkaroos, which was like cookies and sugar icing with a muffin, which now that I know, it's probably not that much better. But it was like, it was just, yeah, taking out what I knew in my head was shit and going towards just a better option. And it didn't have to be like all of a sudden I'm eating like Rich Roll, but slowly learned what was a better option more and more.
Ah, and I think one of the best pieces of advice I've ever heard, and this is something that my dietitian gave me, and this idea of, because trying to cut everything out of your diet that's bad can be quite, it's quite hard, and it can be mentally, you know, exhausting. You can have mood swings, you can crave it. So the approach that we've taken, and this wasn't so much when I was trying to lose weight, but again, more keep that race weight around races, and it's focus more on what you can eat. So what we started to do is, it's, I think there's an actual term for it. I think it's called crowding, maybe. I'm not, don't quote me on that. Don't send emails, please. It's the idea that instead of saying, I'm not going to eat this anymore, you focus on, I am going to eat this stuff instead. So what I try to do, I did when I was coming back after my break earlier this year, was I had to eat 20 different vegetables a week. So my mission every time, because I then set myself this goal of eating 20 different vegetables a week, I could go to the shop and I'd normally get a sandwich with, you know, chicken and this on it. But it's like, well, hang on, I've only eaten 6 vegetables this week and it's Wednesday. And so I'd proactively try to find more vegetables to eat. And by focusing on that, I wasn't then focusing on the things that I wasn't allowing myself to eat. And I just think that's a mental shift or a different way of thinking about it, that you're almost tricking yourself because you then fill up on the stuff that you should be eating and then you're not craving those things, or you don't have room for the things that you know you shouldn't. So I think that's another little handy trick people can do.
Another tip that I've heard is also don't try to make the wholesale change. Like today I start eating healthy.
Correct.
Is just absolutely change one thing at a time. So if like this week, I'm going to drink only one coffee, you know, and then the next week I'm not going to have sugar.
Excuse
in that coffee.
Oh,
well, okay.
What?
Yeah.
I was about to say,
sorry,
to
bad
say
example.
I don't know if we,
bad example.
I can't be on board with this.
No, okay. I'm sorry. How about this? You know, this week I'm not going to have the chips in the evening while I'm watching TV.
You've also picked another one of my kryptonites.
Okay. Well, this is, we're done.
I think we should move on.
Yeah,
Kim,
yeah.
I think we get where you're going, but you're digging yourself a hole.
You two are the problem, not me. I'm giving useful tips to the listeners. You two are being difficult. Anyway, go on.
If people want to hear more about that, like definitely check out your podcast, the Think Fit podcast. I've listened to a few over the last few days and you guys are giving really good advice for people wanting to make change. And it's not just a triathlon podcast. Like what I've actually listened to has been probably more on the lifestyle change. So go listen to that if you're into that. We're going to bring it back to really hard hitting questions. Can you talk about the love affair that you have with your bike on Instagram? I'm very curious about this. Is your wife Des okay with this?
Yeah, she's all right with it. You know, it's so funny because I had this philosophy where I was like, you know what, I'm a triathlete. I should be putting up swim photos and run photos and all this sort of stuff. And I think I started to put up a few photos of my bike and I noticed, oh man, people really like the photos with my bike. I was like, okay, you know, give the people what they want a little bit. And then I was getting a little bit, oh, it's not so good. Maybe I should. So you start putting up stuff that doesn't have the bike in it and it, like, nobody interacts with it. I'm like, oh, I guess people prefer the photos of the bike. So I go, oh, again, I'll. And my problem is my background is social media marketing. So I can't. I have a very analytical approach to a lot of the stuff that I do. So then I put up more bike photos and engagement goes up. I get a couple hundred new followers. I'm like, this is obviously what people want. And then I have people start going, oh God, I'm sick of the photos of you and your bike. I'm like, I don't know what to do here, man. Like, I don't put up bike photos. Nobody interacts with it. I put up a bike photo. 2,000 people bloody like it. Look, again, it's just me trying to take the piss a little bit. I think it's very, you know, triathlon's a serious sport. And, you know, we work hard. We train hard. We make a lot of sacrifices. And I just think, you know, we need to take time to remember that this is fun. This is a hobby. This is something we do. You know, we're not paying our bills with it. It's important to try not to take ourselves so seriously. And I love my bikes. I'm really lucky. I'm blessed to have a company that supports me and gives me bikes. And if I can try to promote them at the same time as having some fun myself. And I think, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but when I'm online and I see a lot of the, you know, the sponsored age group athletes, and it's literally like looking at a feed of advertisements. Mm-hmm. I think it's really, nothing turns me off an Instagram account or in a Facebook page more than the shameless, obvious promotion. I think it's, you know, it's not why I follow people. But the reality is that when you start to have companies that give you things for free or give you, you know, pay you to promote things, you need to work out a way to do it. Now, I've always tried to promote my sponsors in a way that isn't super obviously, hi, buy this product. This product costs XXX. I want to give people, if people choose to follow my crazy triathlon adventures, I want to give them a reason to without ramming products down their throat a lot of the time. I think it's just, you know, that's my way of thinking. And again, I know I piss people off sometimes because I get the hate messages and I get the people telling me to block them and all that. So I understand. Look, and ultimately, if people don't like it, they don't have to follow. I don't take it personally when people don't. It's fine. Like I say to so many of my friends and family now, they're like, oh, you on Instagram, like, don't follow me. Like, honestly, it's just me and my bikes. It's not worth it. Like,
don't then really have a love affair with your bikes. This is just, you know, what you've figured
there's
out.
There's a lot of giant bicycle in the bed photos there, Kim. I don't know. This is borderline, I don't know, bicyclephilia?
I think the best one was when I had the two bikes in the bed with me and I said it's a menage a trois. That was
sad
a good one.
Trombone for you.
I like it.
Yeah. So last week,
the triathletes are laughing.
Yeah. Taryn's away for a week last week, 7 days, which is probably the longest trip he's taken since we've been together, potentially. And he left his brand new Ventum at home, which he hadn't had a chance to even ride yet. It had just been built, came back from the bike shop. We were just coming out of the last couple of days with snow on the ground. So it was all melting. He couldn't ride it yet. He left. And he's posting pictures while he's away, captioning them. Oh, this is what I miss most. My Ventum. Do you think my Ventum misses me? Oh yeah, your wife and your dogs don't matter, but your Ventum probably misses you a lot. And
I
then another
Kim
one about,
it.
Do you think Kim would mind if I had the Ventum in the bed? Yeah, Kim would mind. She's not moving over for the Ventum. Give me a break.
I think the lucky thing for me is that I work from home and my wife doesn't. So I have plenty of time during the day when she's at work that I can do all this stupid stuff. Although I do have a bit of a bone to pick with you, Taryn. I saw you put up a trainer photo riding with a disc wheel, mate. Now that is a bit of a faux pas if ever I've seen one. What's the geo, mate?
A trainer ride with the disc wheel? I had to see if it could stand up to our 75 kilometer an hour wind.
And it almost didn't.
And it did not. That was a very big mistake. I looked at the Google weather and it was like, all right, gusts up to 30. And I said, okay, perfect. This is about the weather that I want to see how it feels. Well, actually, those gusts were about 75.
60. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That 60 to 75.
That was a hard lesson learned. My body did not appreciate that Monday morning.
I did a race last year in Melbourne and it was so windy they actually banned disc wheels. And I took down a set of 808s. So I was riding on the 808s and that was bad enough.
Oh, yeah.
It was so windy that I always say, if you've seen the Harry Potter movies, it's like in the first Harry Potter movie when he's on the broom that's bucking around. That's what I felt like on my bike. I was too scared to go to my aero bars because it was so windy, like the barricades were being blown over. And I remember a guy goes flying past me, aero, you know, super aero position, absolutely pumping it. And his bike literally got swept out from under him because the wind was so strong. Like he didn't fall over. He was swept. Like his wheels went under him. And I was like, man, this is why they said no disc wheels on this course. I
think. Yeah, it totally makes sense that they don't allow that in Kona. I'm like, yeah, that's a fair rule.
Exactly.
What has been your biggest challenge throughout this? I know that you're chasing 4:05 as a time in a half Ironman. Is that more challenging than those first few months or the lifestyle change that you had to make to lose the weight?
I don't think so. I think I've found that with the training, it because as you improve, it always sort of feels the same to me. Like I've never felt like this stuff's ever gotten easier. all the training always feels as hard to me. And I always say this to people, like, I'm sorry, it never gets easier because you get better. I think probably the biggest challenge I've actually been facing has been recently, and that's because I've had this injury. And I actually said to my wife this week, I'm getting to this point now where I'm struggling for motivation a little bit, because for the first time in my life, I haven't signed up for a race because I actually don't know when I'm going to be better. And there's been so many races that have now come and gone that I haven't been able to do because I've drawn a line in the sand saying, I'm not racing again until I'm over this injury. This has been something that's been really hard for me to deal with, because again, a lot of the guys that I train with, race with, I see getting faster. There's guys who raced, there's a race in Australia a few weeks ago in Melbourne that I've done every year that it's been on except for this year. And there were people that I know I was faster than posting really fast times. And it's really hard for me to go, well, that I could have gone 4:07 that day or something like that. And that's been the biggest challenge I think I've faced for a long time. Again, the weight loss thing is funny because you make the changes and it sucks for like a week, but then you start to see the results, and the results I found motivated me to keep going. The training, same thing, you know, it's hard when you first start. Like when I first started with my coach, the change to my training was hard, but I start to see the results, so it makes it better. This for me is probably the biggest, because I'm not seeing any results and I'm still just treading water basically. And it's physically and mentally very difficult for me at the moment, because I just want to get better. And, you know, I've seen physios, I've seen chiros, I've done everything that they've told me to get better, and it's not made a difference. I genuinely think this is the biggest challenge I've faced since I've gotten fit, is this ongoing, horrible, niggling injury that just won't piss off.
Well, and that it kind of leads into a question that Mike, your co-host, told us to ask, which is, what keeps you chasing your 405 dream through all of these challenges?
I don't know. It never was something that I set out for. Like, I did that first race, I was like, 4:05, that's not very good. And then I think it was probably after I'd done about 3 or 4 of the 70.3s. And I think my second 70.3, I went 4:51 maybe. And I thought, you know, that's not that far off 4:05. Again, little did I know that to make up those, you know, the closer you get to 4:05, the harder it makes to make those times. And for me, it's just become, it's just a thing that I set myself to do. And then I stupidly went out and told everybody that's what I wanted to do. And now I kind of feel like, because I've said it, I have to try to do it. And I think realistically, I am very well aware that there's a real chance that I will never get there. And I think I'm okay with that. Like, I have come to appreciate the journey, I think, more so than the end result. Like, yes, you know, I've won my age group at races. I've won money at races. Like, I've done things in races that are great, but I still enjoy the training, the lifestyle a lot more. And I think that's probably why I remain motivated to do it, is because I love the way I live my life now compared to how I used to. And I think if chasing a goal of 4:05 means it keeps me motivated to do that, then that's great for me. So
I think that's a fantastic place to wrap it up here, that it's not necessarily about the podium finishes or the money or the sponsors
or
the times. Yeah, it's the journey. And something that you said there, I don't remember exactly how you worded it, but living your life differently than you used to is what's more important than anything. That's the lesson, is that this is a lifestyle that can be very fulfilling and not seemingly fulfilling on the surface.
Well, it's just, I mean, it's that difference of, you used to covet your, you know, Friday or Saturday nights out with the boys drinking until 3 a.m. And now your favorite thing in the world is getting up at 5:30 in the morning to meet your Tuesday, Thursday ride group. You're never happier than Tuesday and Thursday mornings with your ride group. And that is a massively different mindset, but it is where you are now. And that is lifestyle, you know. And I think for anybody who is embarking upon, they're at the beginning of that, just know, you know, these things that make you happy now that you know aren't good for you, eventually those won't make you as happy anymore when the things that are good for you start making you happy. And it's gradual for a lot of people, but when you get there, it's really cool, because that is your lifestyle. And that is, you know, that's obviously where everybody wants to get.
I completely agree.
Yeah. What messages do you have to, well, you kind of just said it. Any, I guess, parting advice for people looking to get started?
Look, I think the things I find a lot of people, again, we spoke about common themes at the start of this, and I think is I find a lot of people who, like, I was that guy who felt like I tried everything. I felt like I tried every diet. I felt like I tried every exercise. Like, you know, I tried the gimmicks. I tried the non-gimmicks. I had given up. I, hand on my heart, had come to a point where I said, this is not, I'm going to be overweight. And then it worked. So I always say to people, it will work for you. Like, don't ever give up. And the other thing as well is, like, I am the most ordinary person on the planet. Like, that's why I call my blog My Extraordinary Ordinary Life. Like, there is nothing special about me. And if I'm able to do what I've done, anybody else can. And that's a real thing I try to make people understand is like, do not ever compare yourself to other people and say, no, you can't. No, they're better. Like, that's rubbish. If you really want to achieve something and you work hard at it, you will be able to get there. It's just, it might, you know, different people take different amounts of time. But never, ever give up because you think you can't do something, because I promise you, there is a way. If you really want to find a way to do it, you will. So I think, yeah, something like that. Hope that sounded fancy. And
that was really fancy. You put an accent on anything?
Like, yeah.
Oh, I'll listen. I like it.
Me too.
Where should people check you out, Tim?
Oh, man, I'm all over it. But as you said, Instagram, I'm at tford14. But again, it's literally mostly just photos of me doing stupid stuff with my bikes. I have a podcast, yeah, Think Fit. They're everywhere too. I've got a website, oztriathlete.com. And that's probably about it. I think
you've got a, you've got a page, on Maca X, or basically the entire website is yours now from the sound of it. Kick Maca out of there. It's all you now.
That's what, when I started to take over at the start of the year, we've been redesigning the team racing kits. We've got a new company doing the whole line of merchandise. And because we've sort of redesigned, a lot of people were being, oh, don't change the design too much. And I commented and said to somebody, what you guys don't realize is I'm actually changing the name from Team Maca X to Tim Maca X. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping that nobody will notice. But no, yeah, look, you can find out about my coaching and stuff on MacaX.com. And look, I would not be involved with the company if I didn't think it was great. And you know, the story that Chris has and what he's done for the sport, I think is great. And I'm really happy and honored to be involved with it. So yeah.
Yeah, it's all good. I will, I'll link up everything that you do in our show notes, and people should really check it out. It's a great message that you are spreading. So thank you very much, Tim. And pass along our thanks to Mike for giving us a little bit of dirt on you and for doing what you guys do.
I'll have to have a chat with him about it and go, mate, I didn't know you were bloody talking behind my back, but that's all good. It's funny about what we're recording our podcast tonight, and we're doing that whole idea of comparing yourselves to others and motivation. So I thought, you know, it's been a good primer. But I just wanted to say thank you so much, guys. Like, I really appreciate, I really appreciate the opportunity to come on your show. I'm really grateful for it. So thank you so much.
Aw, shucks. Jeez. We're happy to have you.
We even hit him below the belt. We hit him right in the Speedo, and he's still thankful. We weren't tough enough, Kim.
Yeah.
Next time. Thanks, Tim.
Thank you, guys. Thank you very much.
If there was anything on the podcast that you heard and you want to know more about, you can visit our show notes at triathlonterran.com/topics/triathlonterranpodcast. We'll have all of the links listed there. Any other info that you may not have had time to write down or whatever, it's listed there for you in perpetuity.
Something newer, juicier, freer.
We love free.
We've had resources kind of scattered throughout the website for the past year that we've built up. Well, I have put that all on one single page on the website at triathlonterran.com/free resources. Just by entering your email address, you can get a free swim drill program, a free strength training program, a running drill program. And as we start coming out with things, everything will be there. So you can check it now, you can check it later.
Come early, come often. Mm-hmm. We'll be adding stuff all the time, so make sure you check it out frequently. Also, if you've got questions for Taryn, and many of you do, and you leave them in the YouTube comments, Facebook, Instagram, etc., we're trying to aggregate that all into one spot so everybody can see and hear the answer. And that's why we've now launched the Triathlon Trainiask podcast, because it's Trainiacs asking questions. So what we want you to do is head over to triathlonterran.com/trainiask. If you have a question, you'll record it and Taryn may answer it on the podcast. He's recording them every single weekday, and you can find the podcast on every single podcast player out there. And Trainiask is spelled TRAINIASK.
Short nuggets of info. Every episode, I guarantee under 10 minutes.
Perfect.
And it's hard to get me to stop talking. So this is a feat. Finally, last thing that you can do is, if you like this show or the Trainiask show, when you check it out, head over to iTunes, give us a review, good, bad, indifferent. Hopefully 5 stars, because we're pretty awesome.
Reviews just really help us out.
It really helps with the iTunes algorithm. However it happens, it works. It's internet magic and helps other new or aspiring Trainiacs discover us. So that would be much appreciated.
Thanks, folks. See you next time.